We have some indication of fire and smoke at the Pentagon right now. WTOP's Neil Augenstein. Neil, are you... can you tell us what you see at the Pentagon now?
Mike, can you hear me? Mike?
Yes, I can. Neil Augenstein, you're live on the air. Tell us what you see at the Pentagon.
Okay, I'm standing right on, 395, right by the Boundary Channel Drive exit, looking across to the Pentagon, seeing heavy, heavy smoke.
Shortly after the second plane hit the World Trade Center, it was announced that the FAA was grounding all flights in and out of New York. So we realized, of course, that, that flights to and from D.C. would be affected too. So I headed to Reagan National Airport. And as I was parking there, I looked over the trees past Crystal City and was able to see heavy smoke. I thought to myself, no way. I saw an Airports Authority police officer who was looking at the same smoke, and he had his radio to his ear. And he told me that he, in fact, heard that a plane had crashed into the Pentagon. So I got back into my car and headed toward the Pentagon while trying to reach the newsroom. And you'll remember, of course, that it was tough, if not impossible, to get a cell phone signal that day with everyone making cell phone calls. Eventually, when I got to Gravelly Point, I was able to get through. I pulled over. I jumped on the hood of my car to try to see the Pentagon because I wanted to get on the air with a story. But I still couldn't see the Pentagon itself over the trees, so I didn't have enough information to file a report. So I got back in the car again, took the ramp to 395 South, and could finally see the Pentagon and the smoke. Now, we didn't talk about it that day, but we had a brand new phone system at WTOP, and by mistake, everyone was hanging up on each other. We didn't know how to put a call on the air very well. So add that to the mix. Eventually, I did get through. Mike Moss started to toss to me. I wasn't sure whether he could hear me or not. Then he and Richard Day said that they could hear me, so I began describing what I could see, and at that point what I could see was the smoke. Now remember, I still hadn't confirmed what had happened, but I described my conversation with a police officer. After that first report, I got back in the car and to get a little bit closer, and heard over the police scanner that a fourth plane had been hijacked and was thought to be 20 miles out and heading back to D.C. I hit the record button on my mini disc recorder in case there was another explosion. I couldn't get through to the newsroom on the phone, so I sent an email that said another plane was coming. And to this day, I don't really know whether that information ever got on the air. And of course, a few minutes later, we heard that the fourth plane had crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
I was on the Hill. It was an extraordinary scene, one that I've never seen before or since. People streaming out of their offices, members taking their staffs, shepherding them, as it were. Total chaos. There really had been no plan for anything like this. And I remember I walked into a group of people, and there was Nancy Pelosi, who's now the Speaker of the House, then a California congresswoman, taking her staff out. And they were all distraught. She was remaining calm in the midst of a lot of uncalm people. You could see that. And she just didn't really want to say very much. She didn't think, what comment could I make that would be appropriate? And I think that's how a lot of people felt. This was the most astounding thing that had happened. It's something that nobody expected. Where are we going to go from here? What are we going to do? And the day got worse for me as a reporter because so many people were using cell phones that my cell phone was just put out of service, really. And so what I finally did was I went to a little row house near the Hill that was occupied by a special interest group that lobbied Congress people. And I knew the people who ran that shop, and they were more than welcoming. They gave me an office and a phone, and I was able to call people up and do interviews and things of that nature. And I noticed out the windows people were constantly streaming up and down the street. It was right on the cusp of the Hill, and just this uncertainty, I won't say panic, but it was just a day. It was the day of infamy, the day no one will ever forget.
There were a couple hours there, of course, when they weren't sure that all the planes were accounted for, which is, I was up there roaming around, and they had this they made it wider as they went along, cordoned off the Capitol area. And I recall seeing the guys up on top of the Supreme Court building with binoculars searching the sky. And then finally there was word that all the planes were accounted for, and there's a big media scrum. And what I recall is the eerie aftermath of walking across, and they finally let you go back to your office and let me walk across to my car, and just that eerie aftermath of abandonment on the hill.
That's right. We both commented on it. We were walking along the east front of the Capitol in the parking lot area, and the place was deserted. And it had that eerie 1984 feeling, when cities are deserted, when halls of nations are deserted, when the government isn't there, because everybody had been evacuated and told to go home. Now, gradually, people would come back. But at that time, it really was quite forlorn. And as I recall, the House stayed in session. The Senate went out that day. So technically, you still had a house, at least for a while that day, with just a few people in the chamber. So that was a stark reminder, a symbolic reminder of how things had just come to a halt. Obviously, with the Pentagon in flames, the World Trade Center destroyed, there was a lot of buzz about another target. Was it us? And the question was it the White House or us? And it became fairly clear that that third plane that went down in the Pennsylvania field had been intending to hit Washington, D.C., and most likely the capital of the United States. It was such an obvious target, such an obvious icon of the United States. How could they not want to do it? And there were stories going around about how the leadership of the time met about strategy and what to do. And the irony is that out of the window of the chamber, of the rooms, of the offices of the leadership that were deciding where to go next. Of course, if they looked across the Potomac River, they could see the smoke coming from the Pentagon as they made their decision. What a scene. And there was the order, if you will, was if we have to shoot down a plane, we have to shoot down a plane. And when you think about it, innocent lives on a plane being shot down, and yet it had come to that. It's them or us, and whoever suffers, suffers. And that stayed with me for a long time, the thought about that, the thought about the fact that we could have been next, and how successful would they have been. It's my feeling the plane would never have gotten to the Capitol, obviously. It would have been shot down. But you never know. Mm-hmm.